Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I'm here. Let the bells ring out, the banners fly. It's too good to be true. Feast your ears on me. I'm here. You hold a. Hey, it's a minute past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Let's turn the drum loop down just a little bit there. Yes. If you want to join in the madcap merriment, run on over to the chat room tab at headonradionetwork.com and jump right in, where you will be joined by Doctor Who. The Doctor? Really? Which Doctor? Well, this Doctor. Doctor Who, Earther, Little Gray, Mr. Gibson, Texas T, Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has once again folded space to become Man Cave. You know, we'll know when the weather changes out in Northern California, because our third stage guild navigator won't fold space, and he'll just be Sparky. Not that there's anything, any such thing as just being Sparky. All right, so I signed into the chat room, and what do I find? What do I find for a topic there? Topic: tonight's question, is Asa dead? And I was just talking to him. But it turns out they're not talking about Brother Deacon Asa. Thank goodness. They're talking about, you know, over on Outsiders. No spoilers, please. I haven't gotten to watch it yet. Just saying, you know. Yeah. So there's that. Let's see. The happy birthday goes out this afternoon to Texas Betsy, longtime member of our community. Happy birthday, Texas Betsy. It is, of course, the 13th day of April, 2016. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yep, there's that, too. Yes. No, Thomas. Unlike the Kenyan Muslim usurper wizard, I am not afraid to say my name. No, not at all. You know, he won't say radical jihadi Islamist terrorism. You couldn't make him do that if you had a bucket of hot rivets. Okay, all right. Thank you for changing the topic. Topic now in the chat room: Asa is not dead yet. Bob,
I'm not dead yet.
Oh, you will be very soon. You look very ill. I feel fine. I feel happy. Yeah. Okay, thank you for checking in, Brother Deacon Asa. The rumors about my death are highly exaggerated. Yes. Good to know indeed. And I want to send out thanks to some folks. I want to send out thanks to Kurt, and to Vernon, and to Dave. I'm scrolling here. And I do so. Also, thanks going out to Charlene, who is a subscriber. Because of those folks, in the hours after the program closed last night and between then and now, we've just about knocked down the entirety, filled up the entirety of the hole. So that means I am happy to announce that we have only $230 to raise this evening. We can do that, can't we? One at 2:30, two at 1:15, four at 57:50, yeah. Or 10 at $20, 10 at $23, 23 to 10. Yeah, the cipher and gazettas get me after a while. So there you are. And if you prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, of course, the address for that is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And a reminder that checks and money orders only, please, made payable to The Horn, not Bob Kincaid, because we share, we and the Klan go to the same UPS store, and you know the Klan can get a little grabby if anything should be mistakenly put in the wrong box. And golly, if only we could go nationwide with a send dicks to the dicks program to get lots and lots of dildos and lube and I don't know, maybe do they make blow up Klan dolls? Get all those sick weird freaks. Exactly. Gerald just said, don't forget about the dildos for the Klan campaign. It's out there for anybody who wants to participate. Yep. And speaking of dildos, I don't know if you caught this or not, but turns out that back when he was Solicitor General of Texas, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the Canadian-born anointed booger-eaten future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. Turns out that he ordered his office to file a response, and this is not a joke. Kind of wish it was. His office filed a response in a court case over dildos in Texas. Yes, of course he did. And he did this because he's a good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, anti-dildo Christian. Mm-hmm. The pleadings are out there for you, the pleadings are out there for anyone who wants to read them. This of course, is the guy that is being offered up as the alternative to T-Rump, whose kids are so goddamn dim they couldn't be bothered to register to vote in the New York primary back in October, before the registration deadline closed, and back before October constitutes in the mind of T-Rump. A year or so ago, I guess campaigns can make, but God knows, yeah. There appears to be a split in the circuits, though, on dildos. You might recall that Governor Sam Brownback of Kansas Stan was willing to sell dildos to finance the budget of the state of Kansas that, you know, he wrecked. So yes, a court case really did go up involving dildos in Texas. God, you. Oh, yeah, I mean, you can't make this. You know, back when I was just a little tiny child, I've told this story before. Back when I was just a little tiny child, all the parents would proudly ask their little children, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And all my little playmates were saying things like, "I want to be a policeman. I want to be a fireman. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be a nurse." I said, "I want to be Roger Mudd. I wanted to be a journalist. I just didn't know the word for journalist yet. So I just said I wanted to be Roger Mudd." And understanding, my mother, who wanted to be a journalist, was a high school journalist, in fact, before she was not allowed to go on to college, and instead went and supported the war effort by working in a munitions factory on the eastern shore of Maryland, made her proud. She told that story through the years and reminded me of it. And when I went off to become a young journalist at Chicken Noodle News, she was extra double plus good proud. But I don't think anybody ever imagined that ambition would lead to me sitting in a studio on the 13th of April 2016 talking about the former Solicitor General of Texas, who now wants to be the President of the United States of America, filing briefs against the right of Texans to own sex toys. And of course, he was deeply opposed to them. It was a big deal. It had to do with stores in Austin, Texas, who sold sex toys and a retail distributor of sex toys, and they challenged a Texas law that outlawed the sale and promotion of what were termed obscene devices. And if you violated that law, you could go to prison for up to 2 years in Texas. This was great back during the Great Dildo Wars. Mississippi, Alabama, and Virginia also had anti-dildo statutes. In point of fact, as Mother Jones points out, a mother in Texas who was a sales rep for an organization, a company called Passion Parties, got arrested by two undercover cops for selling vibrators at a gathering like a Tupperware party, only for, you know, dildos. And so they sued. The plaintiffs in the sex toy case sued, and they said that the Texas anti-dildo statute violated the right to privacy. And the federal judge who heard the case said, "Nope, disagree. You lose. Selling sex toys is not a protected conduct under the Constitution of the United States," at which point the plaintiffs appealed, and that triggered the duty of Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, to jump in and defend freedom by saying that there was no right to dildos in Texas. By 2007, the legal team under Cruz's direction had filed a 76-page brief that supported the district court's decision, arguing, quote, the Texas Penal Code. No, really. Because the goddess of irony is always on the job. The Texas Penal Code prohibits the advertisement and sale of dildos, artificial vaginas, and other obscene devices. But it does not forbid the private use of such devices. And it was all swirled around the holding in Lawrence versus Texas, which back in 2003 deeply upset fat now dead Tony Scalia. And arguing on the Lawrence point, the office headed by Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eaten future king of America, pled that the Lawrence case, quote, focused on interpersonal relationships and the privacy of the home, and that it did not block the use of private use of obscene devices. And went on to say, obscene devices do not implicate any liberty interest. Any alleged right associated with obscene devices ain't deeply rooted in the nation's history and traditions. As Mother Jones notes, in other words, you might have a right to possess them, but that don't mean that you got a right to buy them. They went on to cite, Cruz's department did, the police power of Texas to protect public morals by discouraging prurient interests in sexual gratification, combating the commercial sale of sex, and protecting minors. And they went on to say that the government had an interest in preventing autonomous sex. Autonomous sex would be either sex with a robot, an automaton, or masturbation. There is no substantive due process right to stimulate one's genitals for non-medical purposes unrelated to procreation or outside of an interpersonal relationship. Hence, there's no right to promote dildos, vibrators, and other obscene devices. By February 2008, the Court of Appeals told Ted Cruz he could fuck right the fuckity fuck off, and said that in the Lawrence decision, it became standing law that the people of the United States have the right to be free from governmental intrusion regarding the most private human contact, sexual behavior. The court added, an individual who wants to legally use a safe sexual device during private intimate moments alone or with another is unable to legally purchase a device in Texas, which heavily burdens a constitutional right. Yeah. They went on to say that Texas has no legitimate role in discouraging prurient interests in autonomous sex and the pursuit of sexual gratification unrelated to procreation. They said, the case is not about public sex. It is not about controlling commerce in sex. It is about controlling what people do in the privacy of their own homes because the state is morally opposed to a certain type of consensual private intimate conduct. This is an insufficient justification for the statute after Lawrence. Whatever one might think or believe about the use of these devices, government interference with their personal and private use violates the Constitution. Mm-hmm. And thus did they lose. And Cruz did not take the dildo ban case on to the Supreme Court of the new United States. Yeah. Arthur pointing out, by the way, see, the trick is to make a dildo that is technically also a functioning gun, firearm. Then you're free to sell all the dildos you want. Just make sure it doesn't go off. I mean, it's not like, it's not loaded with bullets. I mean, right. So that's the front end of the Ted Cruz dildo story. I don't know. I don't know if Ted ever brought any lawsuits trying to state the right of the state of Texas or assert the right of the state of Texas to mandate. It's really tough to get through these stories sometimes without some embarrassing words. How fast one may wash one's nasty bits? I don't know. I mean, I don't. But we do know one thing. And as Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker notes, just leave this story on the nightstand right next to my battery-operated boyfriend. So here's the rest of the story. The rest of the story. It turns out that there was an immediate response from Craig Mazin. Craig Mazin was Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America's college roommate. And he is now a screenwriter and a filmmaker in L.A. And he has made no bones of the fact... There we go again. He thinks Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz would be a god-awful president of the new United States of America. And so he tweeted earlier, Ted Cruz thinks people don't have a right to stimulate their genitals. I was his college roommate. This would be a new belief of his. Ted Cruz did not have a dildo stashed under his pillow. Ted Cruz slept on top of his pillow. Which immediately called to mind the words, or a paraphrasing of the words, of Miss Nell Harper Lee. And there he was, a-ruttin' on my new pillow. He is one sick puppy, isn't he? I mean, bad. Bad. Icky, gross. So we've got that's kind of where we start. But by no means is it where we end. Because we got a lot of work to do this evening. Has anyone caught Rafaelito shaving his palms or anything? I don't know. But that's, and of course, a story like this, there he was, rutting on my new pillow, brings out the best in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Ron and Raleigh pointing out, hey Bob, the right to possess but not the right to purchase, could this work with guns? I see the beginning of Second Amendment trap laws. Oh, well, yes. I like that. Ron also pointing out, remember, your home state of Alabama, Stan, outlawed marital aid several years ago. The law still stands to the best of my knowledge. Oh, okay, from the Department of Ew. Oh, okay, Heidi, Carol informs me, Heidi does it for him now. Stubble during a handshake is bad manners.
Ow! Yuck!
Thomas says, I wonder where the little blue-haired ladies would stand, or rather sit, on the use or sale of dildos. Don't ask them. That's just not the kind of question you ask the little blue-haired ladies. Randy just asks, Because I said the front end of the story, Randy says, is there a back end or would that just be too queer? Tim from L.A. says, just wondering if it's legal to carry a dildo in public. College friends were carrying dildos during Halloween in Los Angeles. I wonder what will happen in Texas. Well, in fact, that was a movement for a while. I don't know how it's going, but open carry dildos in Austin were quite the thing for a while. Oh, yes, 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 GK. We're going to get there. Believe me. Trust me. In regard to Raphaelito, Heather says, well, he's a perv, but he's delusional and thinks he's Jesus himself. Could we expect any less from him? No, and I dare not expect any more. And thank you very kindly to our buddy Mark in Florida or elsewhere. Thank you kindly, Mark. We now have only $130 to go in fundraising for the evening. So, yay! Let's get out in front of this thing. 13 at 10, 10 at 13, 1 at 130, 2 at 65, 4 at 32.50, 8 at 16 and a quarter. Yeah, we can do this. We can do this. Let's see here. Wait, and yes, I realize the mental image that is accompanied by, and there he was, a rutting on my new pillow, has probably taken most everybody's mind off anything resembling a meal. But let's see. Still, we had a lovely, an absolutely lovely prayer meeting Wednesday dinner down in the fellowship hall. We truly, truly did. And the little old blue-haired ladies with whom I did not discuss the question of with whom I did not discuss the issue of Ted Cruz and his proclivities. I try to be decent about such things. But it was a lovely, lovely fellowship dinner. Fried chicken for this mid-April meal, yeah. And of course, we got them a wok there in the, and the little old blue-haired ladies have been having a high old time stir-fried vegetables. So we had fried chicken and stir-fried cauliflower and stir-fried broccoli and stir-fried little slices of carrots. They get out their Vegematic and just go to town on it. Stop it. But we had, you know, the carrot and raisin salad. It's so springtimey, you know, the carrot raisin salad. And just an absolutely lovely, lovely, beautiful carrot cake, because they had carrots left over from the carrot raisin salad. And the deacons jumped right on it. And then, of course, they trundled their great bulk up to the parking lot so they could have their postprandial dinner with the sinners. Mm-hmm. And naturally, I sent Carol Baker out there with the cattle prod to run them in from the parking lot, in through the vestibule, down past that 20-year-old bowl of desiccated butter mints, and down front here where they can pass the plate during during the offertory hymn. Lord, when my merciful God, when Tim from L.A. says, tell people to come, what? Tell people to come into the chat room. I mean, dildo loaded, joy jelly, and other fun stuff. It is nasty in the chat room now. By the way, I love how you segue from porn to food porn. Perfect. Yeah. But anyway, the deacons are standing here waiting to pass the plate. And Brother Mark has already taken care of a whole lot of the tithing for this evening. And daggummit, we'll just get them to pass the plate during the offertory hymn. And I did want to let people know that, just be careful. Just press that little PayPal button. Keep it, every head down and every eye closed, every head bowed, every eye closed, except for the one you keep kind of cracked open a little bit so you don't get hit in the head with that big old heavy plate. And just press that little PayPal button in the bottom there. It's right in the center of the red velvet. Because, see, we put the red velvet in the bottom of the big old heavy brass plate so that the coins don't clank while everybody's got their head bowed and their eye closed. And that's how that works. So I'm going to call the minister of music up for our offertory hymn. And I'm going to ask the minister of music to deviate. I don't just use words, I know what they mean. To deviate, please, from the usual offertory hymn and give us something a little bit more commensurate with America's future. With America's future Ayatollah, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Good Christian, got a good congregation. My wife's on vacation, and the kids are all grown. I've got me some swimsuits, rubber's my desire. Got a head mask of latex that makes me just moan. Send me a dildo, I can't buy one in Montgomery. Send me a sex toy, but the deacons can't know. Just give me one air hole that I can breathe in through. Hard time me with bungees, fix them just so. Give me one air hole that I can breathe in through. Play me just hear it buzzing. And I can't do nothing, all tied up like this. Get lightheaded, and the dark so complete now. I can hear angels singing and the rubbers just like a kiss.
Glory, praise Jesus for the many and manifest talents of Brother John Fox. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed, brethren and sistren. I love you. You might want to remember that story going back. As Ron and Raleigh pointed out, to when Alabamistan had outlawed marital aids, and the pastor of one of the largest Baptist churches in the Montgomery area was found when his wife had gone away to visit her parents, was found trussed up in a couple of scuba suits with some of the aforementioned dildos that put wherever dildos will go on a feller. And, you know, dead. Mm-hmm. So, Sister Carol Baker, when you say that song is killer, that is more than an accurate reflection of what went on. Mm-hmm. He had been a classmate, by the way, in seminary, the dead preacher had, of Jerry Falwell, and they were very close. So it is, brethren and sistren, prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and I'm going to implore you to get up off of your seats and onto your feet and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar, ha, glory, and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server, ha, amen. On high, I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Bob Kincaid, and we have us a stirring prayer meeting Wednesday here on the Horn. Glory, hallelujah, amen. Brethren and sistren, we have talked many times about the religious persecution that is rampant in Merca today. And we have another example of that there. Mm-hmm. Religious persecution is on the march in Nebraska Stan. Because you see, brethren and sister, and even if you are in prison, you have a right to practice your religion, because that's why we've got us the First Amendment. That's why we've got us freedom of religion. And can't nobody take it away. If you're in prison out in Nebraska Stan or anywhere else, and you're Jewish, they can't make you eat no pork. And you can grow your hair in little curly ringlets, and you can wear the funny hat, and the funny shawl and all the clothes that God wants you to wear, or else he'll hate you forever. And if you're Muslim, and if you're real fundamentalist Muslim, you can grow a beard down to your balls in the name of Allah. And they can't make you eat no pork neither. And you can have your very own little praying rug, and you can pray toward Mecca. Just every time you're supposed to be praying toward Mecca, you can. And if you're Southern Baptist, you can hate gay people and worship your blue-eyed, blonde-haired, white-skinned Jesus Christ. Yes. And if you're Roman Catholic, well, you can demand that they let you eat a little cracker every time you go to Mass. And you get to go to Mass when you need to go to Mass and such like. I reckon if you're Buddhist, you probably get to sit and meditate and maybe ring some little bells now and then. And if you're Hindu, they're probably going to let you have some incense. But brethren and sisters, if you are a follower of Pastafarianism, you are religiously persecuted in this here country. Yes. Because you see, there's a feller in prison named Stephen Cavanaugh. And you know, Jesus Christ did tell us to visit folks what's in prison and such like. But if you go to visit Stephen Cavanaugh, don't you take him no colander to wear on his head like you have to do if and you're a Pastafarian. And don't you take him no new pirate clothes. Because pirate clothes ain't as special and religious as a funny shawl or a funny hat or any of that kind of stuff. It ain't religious enough. Or at least what some heathen unelected black-robed judge in Nebraska has done said. Because Stephen Cavanaugh is a Pastafarian, brethren and sisters. And he is a sincere worshiper of the flying spaghetti monster. And he asked him there in the Nebraska Stand State Penitentiary if he could please have his religious rights that everybody else was getting. But he weren't. But them prison officials persecuted Stephen Cavanaugh, and they said, no, Stephen Cavanaugh, you cannot dress up like a pirate every day just because you worship the flying spaghetti monster and he wants you to wear funny clothes. He's not a serious enough God. Now there's other gods that's real serious, and if they want you, if you want to be one of their religion and wear their funny clothes, we'll let you, Stephen Cavanaugh, but not that one. Uh-huh. They won't let Stephen Cavanaugh have prayer meetings for the flying spaghetti monster, nor will they let him have religious services with other members of the Pastafarian faith there in the state penitentiary of Nebraska Stand. It is just a seething hellscape of religious intolerance there. It is almost as if we only have a First Amendment for a select few weird little faith systems, but not all weird faith systems. Mm-hmm. District Judge John Gerard. Anybody want to look it up and find out who appointed this godless miscreant to the bench? John Gerard, G-E-R-R-A-R-D. John Gerard wrote him a 16-page opinion, and he said that the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster ain't no religion. District Judge John Gerard, who hates God, said it is rather a parody intended to advance an argument about science, the evolution of life, and the place of religion in public education. Well, I just reckon in the afterlife, District Judge John Girard won't be getting no beer volcano nor no stripper factory. He probably don't even believe that the flying spaghetti monster first created a mountain and a tree and a dwarf, as it was revealed unto Bobby Henderson back when he received the first revelations of Pastafarianism back in 2005, or as we call it, the year one. There are thousands, if or tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of followers of Pastafarianism the world over. And they all end their prayers the same way. They say, Ramen. And oodles of people have been allowed to wear their colanders on their head for their driver's license pictures all over the country and even in other places in the world. Because wearing a colander on your head is a religious, it is a religious doctrine and requirement of practitioners of Pastafarianism. Because if you don't wear a colander on your head, then the flying spaghetti monster will not touch you with his noodly appendage. And you will not be received into paradise where there is a beer volcano and a stripper factory when your time here in this veil in this veil of overcooked pasta misery is at its end. The first prophet, Bobby Henderson, of Pastafarianism, back in 2014, became aware of the struggles and travails of Stephen Kavanaugh. And he said, I'm skeptical of anyone asking for money, because Stephen Kavanaugh also asked for $5 million in compensatory damages, and that's probably what kind of pissed off Judge Girard. But the least he could have done was let him have a pirate hat and a plastic sword, or at least a plastic parrot to wear on his shoulder. He said, I'm skeptical of anyone asking for money, and my immediate thought was that this was a frivolous lawsuit, Prophet Henderson said. But after reading the court documents and talking with people in the know, I feel that here is a troubled guy who is legitimately trying to pursue his faith, and only after being stymied by the in-house prison channels was forced to take the fight to the courts. That heathen Judge Girard said that Nebraska prison officials had been reasonable in rejecting Stephen Kavanaugh's request for a religious accommodation. Well, if that's the case, no funny hats for nobody, and start passing out the fucking razors. Or at least the electric ones. It's a prison, after all, and they'd probably all be shanking each other for all they're worth if they's getting real razors. But at least send them all to the barber shop. Nice, nice, high and tight haircuts for everybody. Because either everybody has religious freedom, or ain't nobody gets religious freedom. And what about the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that Brother Bill Clinton done brought to us back in the 90s? I guess this is how it was for Christianity back in the early days of the church, when they'd say, no, we want to worship a feller that we think was born from a little teenage girl who got raped by God, but God never made it seem like he'd had anything to put anything in there to put anything in. He just done it by magic, and so she was a virgin when she had her baby, and she stayed a virgin all her life. Every time she had a baby, even after she was having babies through having real sex with a real hubby, you know, Joseph, stayed a virgin that whole time. And then the Romans, they come along and they nailed him up on a cross, And 3 days, and then once he's good and dead, they took him down, and 3 days later, he walked out, and he walked, looked left, and he looked right, and he looked down on the ground, and he seen his shadow, and he run back in and didn't come out 6 more weeks. And the Roman authorities said, I am sure, they said, it is not a real religion. Feed him to the lion. And all the way into the arena there, they was going, well, you may be a feeding me to the lions, but I really do believe that crazy shit. I ate a cracker the other day and it turned into Jesus meat in my little tum tum. Brother Ron in Raleigh reminds us, hey, Bob, remember Fat Dead Tony told the Native Americans they couldn't use peyote in their religious ceremonies? Exactly. They some religions, and maybe the Pastafarians need to have a doctrine meeting and declare that whenever they drank a little bit of Pabst Blue Ribbon, it turns into linguine with red clam sauce in their tum tums. Or that it's the, wait, no, well, no, the Catholics, the Christians have a lock on the wine, the red stuff. So, I don't know, maybe the flying spaghetti monster's got sort of amber golden blood. So, yeah. That really does piss me off. Who the fuck is a federal judge to declare what's a real religion when what's not, when they're all fucking imaginary, when they are all goddamned well made up, and anybody with a half a brain fucking knows it. What a pissant. You realize how many people would come down on him if he had said that some Christian didn't have a right to practice Christianity, or a Jew didn't have a right to practice Judaism, or a Muslim didn't have a right to practice Islam? And the ecumenical ones would have been all up in arms too. If he'd ruled against the Jew, the ecumenical Christians would have been pissed off. The ecumenical Muslims and Hindus and Jainists and Sikhs, they'd have been pissed off. But not a one, as far as I know, stood up for Mr. Stephen Kavanaugh. I don't know how old he is. I don't even know what he's in for. Probably dope. Well, maybe the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, for whatever circuit that is, will see this for the religious travesty that it is. Maybe it'd be kind of fun to let it go up to the Supreme Court, and it's just a pity that Fat Dead Tony is dead, because it would have been kind of fun to hear him talk about how it ain't a real religion. You know, and him one of those fucking weirdos who beat on himself and wore hair shirts and put barbed wire around his legs and crazy shit like that because he felt like he's better off if he was a suffering like Jeebus done. Shitheads. Yep. Let's see. What else? Mariah is her name. She's an adult now, and we don't know how long she's going to remain one because her days may be short upon this earth. Mariah Walton. She was born in Idaho, Stan. She's 20 years old. And she was born to a fundamentalist Mormon couple. When she was born, she had a birth defect. Mariah did. she had a little congenital hole in her heart. Kept her heart from working the way hearts ought to. And it's not that rare a thing for an infant to be born with that kind of congenital defect. It can be fixed by surgery. And while no heart surgery is simple, the recovery rate and the survival rate is very, very high on this. Babies survive and they go on to lead happy, healthy lives as if they had never been born with that defect. Mariah Walton, however, is 20 years old, and most of the time she has to stay in bed. If she wants to get up out of bed, she has to carry an oxygen tank with her that'll let her breathe. And because she has to carry that oxygen tank, she's had to have screws installed in her bones that'll hold her breathing device on her body. And she is failing. She is fading away at 20 from a condition called pulmonary hypertension. She has pulmonary hypertension because when she was born, it's not like they didn't discover the little hole in her heart. Doctors knew it was there. Only her parents, being a particularly sick, twisted, perverse, disgusting brand of Mormonism, said, no, we are not going to get our little baby surgery. We're going to take her home, and we're going to pray over her. Thoughts and prayers. Thoughts and prayers. And even as she got older, little Mariah still could have been okay. She still could have had treatment that would have made her able to live a healthy, happy, normal life. But her parents were still a-praying and trying alternative medicine. You know what alternative medicine that is rigorously and scientifically tested and proven to work becomes called? Medicine. All through the 1990s. Her parents moved to to be with more weirdo fundamentalists in the 1990s. She was born about 1996. And her parents wouldn't take any of their children to doctors, because they figured their faith and praying was plenty enough to get the job done. 2 years ago, when Mariah turned 18, she left home in a desperate bid to survive. In Canyon County, Idaho, just west of the state capitol there, there's a place called Peaceful Valley Cemetery, and it turns out that cemetery is where the fundamentalist Mormons bury their dead children that they've killed by keeping them away from doctors. There are markers there for children who lived a day, markers there for children who lived a week, markers there for children who lived a month. Butch Otter is the Republican governor of Idaho. He impaneled a task force to look into this problem in his state,
Turns out that the followers of Christ, the weirdo Mormon sect to whom Mariah's parents belonged, it turns out that their child mortality rate is 10 times that of children in Idaho as a whole. Mariah has since told anyone who will listen that she wants to see her parents prosecuted criminally. When asked why, she says they deserve it and it might stop others. See, Mariah is fast approaching a time when the only thing that might save her life is a heart-lung transplant. And those are not easily done, and there's not a lot of hearts and lungs out there for Mariah to choose from. Now, if Dick Cheney, the fucking war criminal, needs a heart, well, they'll go out and bump somebody off in the middle of the night and get Dick Cheney a heart. But in Idaho, you see, there's something called a shield law. And their shield law says it's more important to let parents kill children by praying for them than it is to see those children live to be adults. They can't be prosecuted. Why? Well, two criminals by the name of John Ehrlichman, you might remember these names, and J.R. Haldeman, criminals within the entirely criminal enterprise known as the Nixon administration, interfered with something passed in 1974 and signed into law called the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act, CAPTA. And Haldeman and Ehrlichman, criminals, were both Christian scientists, which religion believes that you can just pray illness away. And as a means of Nixon, Richard M. Nixon, 1974, agreeing to sign the CAPTA into law, he insisted that there be an exception for his buddies Haldeman and Ehrlichman, criminals. And that exception was to shield from prosecution people who kill children in the name of their religious faith. And states followed suit, and Idaho was one of those states. And so children die at massively higher rates in places like Idaho, where weird, sick, twisted, vile, hateful, nasty, yucky, disgusting, misanthropic, shit-headed, asshat fundamentalists go to live off the grid. And so, before she dies, Mariah Walton is begging Idaho to stop the insanity. To stop letting the followers of Christ and other bizarre bunches, fundamentalist Mormons and the lot, stop letting them murder their children through medical neglect. Now, I present these two stories for a reason. It's too goddamn dangerous to let Stephen Kavanaugh have modified religious rights under while he's in the Nebraska State Penitentiary, but Idaho will tiptoe around people who are dead from the neck up and should never be allowed anywhere near children because they are a danger to them. That we have to protect with the strong shield of the First Amendment. Now, to be clear, the followers of Christ are a bunch of Pentecostal fuckheads, whereas Mariah's parents are fundamentalist Mormon fuckheads. But with all due apologies to Gertrude Stein, a fuckhead is a fuckhead is a fuckhead is a fuckhead. But just to review, religious rights of a prisoner who wants to practice an unorthodox religion, not allowed. Killing children in the name of some disgusting deity, A-okay! I know. I want to share a tough little note with you. You remember our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown. Long about the holiday season, Paul from Parts Unknown makes people very, very happy because he sends out batches of what we like to call around here Paulmans. Lovingly peeled and roasted and salted almonds, vegan friendly and yummy, 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 yummy. Well, I got this note from Paul from Parts Unknown a little bit before airtime. Subject line on it was Tough Night. And, you know, this program is not like a lot of mainstream for-profit radio. I try to interact with folks who spend their precious finite time sharing in this conversation. Sometimes at all hours of the day and night, because I consider it a very close friendship relationship. I don't even like the idea of audience, because I can't stand that level of self-elevation. It's a dialogue, not a monologue. Even though I'm Philip Bobstring, I'm doing all the talking right now. So when I see a subject line like "Tough Night" coming from somebody that is a long-standing friend of the program, and member of the community, a friend, I open it. I read a lot of email every day, and I respond to a lot of it too. I had no idea that the rerun stream had shut down, but lo and behold, the rerun stream computer had restarted itself on its own initiative. Sua sponte, ex cathedra, and would not have known it had our buddy Randy in PA not sent me a note saying, "Hey, Bob, stream's dead." So early this morning, I ran lickety-split in here and had to start the player, start the streamer, all of that stuff. Our good friend Chris in Germany, after I upload the podcast every evening, Chris and a couple other people are the first people to usually get it and it's usually before I've knocked off for the night. And so Chris will be so kind as to let me know either podcast ain't there, which translates to, really, Bob, you screwed it up again. Or, hey, podcast, little miracle, podcast downloaded just fine. And I really appreciate these things, and I love the conversations that we have, even outside the hours of the program, because this is not a performance, this is not an entertainment. If it's entertaining, that's cool. Because y'all do some of that for me, too. But we share our fears, we share our worries, we share our happinesses. And it makes and has made for me something really special over, you know, more than 10 years' time. Carol pointing out, yes, those Palmans were awesome. And if they weren't so labor-intensive, I think Paul from Parts Unknown could have a business in it. But they are. They are labor-intensive with a capital intensive. You ever tried to peel an almond? Right. I mean, there's not the Katel almond peeler just ain't out there. And being Katel, if there was, it wouldn't work in the first place. So when I saw Tough Night, I opened the email. And Paul from Parts Unknown writes, and I share this with you because if Paul's feeling it, odds are there's somebody else, or maybe many more people in the Horn Family Community Congregation who are feeling it as well. Paul from Parts Unknown writes, I got in trouble with my wife last night for being a bit of a jerk. No, I am not denying that I am a bit of a jerk in this case, nor am I writing this email to defend my position. I'm not comfortable with my stance, how I feel about this issue, however it is how I truly feel. The issue was over a local shooting that happened here in town. Two people were shot, one wounded and the other dead, and the assailant killed himself later. Before the details of the story came out, my wife wanted to talk about it and discuss how horrible it was. My response to this was, I don't care. It was really late after a long day, and I just wanted to go to bed, not discuss a local shooting at 10:30 p.m. She took offense to the fact that I didn't care and didn't want to talk about it. I know that sounds bad, and it is bad. Knowing that, I still didn't care. I've just become numb to these shootings around the country. The fact that the location is closer to home is irrelevant to me. I think talking about it is a waste of time. Nothing will happen because of this incident. There will be no new policies, no laws passed, no measures taken, or even protests. Nothing will be done. So why waste time talking about it? I know this stance is cold and a tad heartless. I know I am wrong in the compassion department, but am I wrong in the facts department? My wife reminded me that the shooting was in a park that she takes our stepdaughter to frequently to play after school, and they were there just yesterday, and they could have been there for it. I reminded her that the odds of that happening are incredibly low, and just because I had 3 matching numbers on my last Powerball ticket does not mean I almost won the big jackpot. That analogy did not go over well. Yeah, Paul, don't ever do that again. I know that I should feel more compassionate about this. But after Sandy Hook happened, I just have gone numb to these shootings. When Sandy Hook happened, I felt sad and outraged. I was also hopeful that something would be done to change the laws and stop these kinds of shootings. But nothing did. So these shootings have been happening over and over again with no end in sight.
and I would editorialize, not no end in sight, no end. Forget the in sight part. In sight, out of sight, no end. So I just have a hard time feeling anything about them. It is hard to maintain your outrage when you know nothing will be done. Bob, you talk about a shooting story about once a week, and I know you don't cover them all. If you did, it wouldn't be Conversation Radio. It would just be the Daily Gun Report with Bob Kincaid. After taking the morning to reflect on the issue, I realize I do care a little. But not as much as I used to before Sandy Hook. I was just very tired last night and out of emotional energy. My best guess for the real reason for the fight was about sleep. My wife's the kind of person who can't sleep well until she gets something like that off her chest, and if I listen to it, I wouldn't be able to sleep because I'd be angry about that fact, that the fact that nothing would be done. I'd just sit there awake in bed, imagining how some right-winger would say it is too soon after the tragedy to politicize it. In the end, neither of us slept well. My best to the Horn family, and I hope you aren't too angry with my less than stellar behavior. Best of luck to Bernie in New York next week. Signed, Paul from Parts Unknown. And I read that, and I felt a lot of, I wondered if I'm partly responsible. I wonder if my steady drumbeat, because I ran out of things to say about the NRA death lottery that gets played out constantly in this country. I wonder if the fact that I've said, you know, what's there left to say? It's going to happen again. I wonder if I'm part of the problem in that regard. But Jesus Christ, if I'm part of the problem, how much more a part of the problem are the gun fetishizers?
Well, you know, them people had to die because, you know, just like Jefferson said, the tree of liberty from time to time must be watered with the blood of patriots and people who go to parks. It's natural manure.
Thank you, Carol. Carol says that was a truly human reaction that we all go through. It cycles. And it does. But isn't there some saying out there in scientific circles that nature abhors a vacuum? I know if you go and have a cup of coffee in law school, sooner or later you'll sit down in a class that's called variously remedies or equitable remedies or equity. Even though in the modern legal world, in most jurisdictions, law and equity, and that itself is a distinction that really has to be, it doesn't come naturally to the human mind. But if when you get around to that class while you're having a cup of coffee in law school, they'll teach you a maxim, because equity is just chock-a-block with maxims. And there's a maxim that says, equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. And that sounds real, real good, doesn't it? Right up there with nature abhorring a vacuum or something. We don't know how nature feels about a broom, but it abhors a vacuum. But in the case of firearms, that seems to be all so much bullshit. Because equity is tolerating lots of wrongs without any remedies whatsoever, and nature is apparently sitting back and, I don't know, examining its new dildo while a blood-sodden vacuum engulfs this country. Mississippi Stan, of course, Mississippi Stan. Merritt Health Central Hospital in Jackson, Mississippi Stan. This morning, a mama took her two-year-old little baby girl, to the emergency room. Now, we don't know who was sick. Maybe mama was sick and didn't have a sitter or a care that, you know, no daycare. God knows it's Mississippi. You know, having daycare available for mommies on the government tab. Well, Jesus Christ, that'd be Leninist, Marxist, Stalinist, communism, writ fucking large. Or anywhere else in this country, for that matter. So we don't know why they were in the emergency room at Merritt Health Central Hospital in Jackson. We just know that at some point in time, Mama, sitting there in the emergency room waiting room, decided to go over to the vending machines, because there's usually some vending machines in an emergency room waiting room. There's usually a machine that vends out really terrible instant coffee. Really terrible instant tea. Pop machines, little machines for, you know, little bags of potato chips and Fritos and cheesy poofs and peanuts and candy bars and such like. Pack of gum. Maybe she went over to the vending machines to get a Mountain Dew for baby. But this much we do know. Wrangling a 2-year-old, even just one, is challenging. In an environment like an ER, even more so. Maybe baby was cranky. Maybe mama hadn't slept all night. We don't know. But mama's got her purse, and mama's fumbling around, and mama's trying to get a dollar bill out, or maybe she's trying to find some change in the bottom of her cavernous purse, or whatever, to feed to the vending machine. But at some point in time, this much we know, mama dropped her purse, it hit the ground, and the gun just went off. Because mama had a freedom protector in her purse. And when the gun just went off, mama shot her 2-year-old in the face. Now, stop, wait, before you start screaming. Baby is going to survive. Little girl's injuries are said to be non-life-threatening, according to the Clarion Ledger. The bullet only grazed baby's face on the right side, so at most she'll just have a disfiguring scar to live with for the rest of her natural born days, instead of having had her natural born days ended right then, right there.
because mama couldn't come to the fucking ER without a goddamn freedom-protecting death engine pistol in her fucking purse. The usual language appears at the bottom of the story. The shooting remains under investigation. Now, Agnes saw that story as I was reading it earlier today and had to exit the studio rather quickly, especially when she saw the shooting remains under investigation. Because Agnes, being a practical person, said, "The hell is there to investigate?" Over at the Clarion Ledger, they describe the wound that the child received as, you know, the two-year-old who got shot in the face by her mother because the gun just went off. It's a superficial wound. It's a superficial, you know, bullet wound. Jackson Police spokeswoman Calendula Green said the mother dropped her purse while standing by a vending machine, which caused her gun to go off inside her purse. Whoop! Ha! No, the drop in the purse didn't cause the fucking gun to go off. Having a round in the goddamn chamber. Or if it was a revolver, having a round... never mind. That caused the gun to go off. No bullet, no gun go off. You can sit there and beat on the goddamn floor with it. If there's no round in the chamber, it ain't going off. Merritt Health Central Hospital released a statement saying weapons are prohibited on the hospital campus in order to protect the safety of patients, visitors, and employees. This morning, an isolated incident involving the accidental discharge of a visitor's weapon occurred on our campus. It was addressed quickly, preventing serious harm to the patient and risk to others in the hospital. So they didn't have to wait anymore in the waiting room at the emergency room. And there's your answer. You want to get a little goddamn service in the emergency room, drop your gun on the floor, shoot somebody, and whoever gets shot will be treated a fucking immediately. But yes. Calendula Green said the investigation is ongoing. Well, they better not charge that mama. She was just protecting freedom. Right? So, I don't think... Paul from Parts Unknown, I don't think anybody's going to be hating on you. Because if you're feeling that, there's a whole lot more that are too. Because it's not a character flaw on your part, Paul. Left to your own devices, you could probably come up with several rational means to keep those kinds of horrors from happening. But the spoiled, special, pasty-faced, doughy, paranoid white people who have to have fucking guns because it makes them feel all safer and stuff, and because of that will sacrifice other innocent people in this country, they're the problem. Not you. You want this shit to stop. And part of the angst and the agony that you feel, and you wouldn't have written this note if you weren't feeling it, comes from the fact that you know that this country will continue to sacrifice innocence in order to placate dangerous white people with guns.
That's true. That's true, Carol. Shooting your kid in the ER is certainly a time saver. You do not have to shoot me now. You can take me to the ER and shoot me later. See? Land sakes, could that be our buddy Todd?
It might be.
What's...
No.
That's Wednesday.
Well, you know, there's all kinds of preaching, and are these stories more salient now, or are we just paying more attention?
I can't answer that. I mean, I just see what I see. And I think they take on perhaps a greater pathos because of the fact that, you know, as Paul from Parts Unknown points out, we see this shit happen and we know we can't do a damn thing about it. We know that we're going to be, every last one of us, you, me, everybody, we are all in the NRA death lottery.
This is bothering me. I've got bad visions. I'm just seeing trends in my mind right now with this nonsense. And I'm telling you just because I've been on the road like the past 2 weeks. I mean, the past month, I've been gone for 2 weeks, which means I've been in motels and hotels and whatnot in the South. All right. And I see people go in their trunk and get the little case out, right? And I'm thinking, okay, you want to protect yourself in your motel room, maybe, whatever. But these people, a lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of them, just like we say, they had these fetishes. You know, they like to clean their firearm, right? But the more you're touching that firearm, the greater chance it's going to go off.
Well, and I mean, there's a larger problem here, Todd. A lot of these people like to clean their firearms at the same time as they're having a beer.
Exactly. And they're watching
or
the
having,
tape. Well,
or having a half a fifth of liquor.
See? In the hotel room. Now, what happens? I'm next door, right, with my people, with my wife and kids, or, you know, whoever I'm with. See, this is what I can see this. This is going to be a rat. I hope not. See, this is what I'm concerned about, right? You see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah, because I've had that story too about the little girl who was killed in the next door hotel room when the Freedom Protector's gun just went off in the room next to it, and there was no relationship between the two people except for the fact that a handgun round traveling at 2,400 feet per second can go through the craptastic fucking sheetrock that forms the walls between hotel rooms quicker than a wet finger can go through one piece of toilet paper.
Mm-hmm. See, you can hear people. I heard this woman coughing, and it's, you know, this is not a great hotel. It's just, you know, not long ago, but last week, and I'm thinking, damn, somebody could be cleaning their gun, and we could be just shot dead because it happens. It happens all the time, right?
You're goddamn all right it does.
Now, who's responsible? I can't work. I can't do shit. I'm shot. Or my baby's dead. And then the law enforcement, I'm not trying to bring race into this, but like you just said, I'm just saying what I see. It seems like when white folks, it just goes, the gun just goes off and, well, you know how it is. And if a black person gets near a real firearm,
No. If a black person gets near a toy firearm, the cops come and blow his brains out. That happened in Ohio, and the cops were not even charged.
Did you see the guy in South? Well, this is my tangent. Just today, it's disgusting. From last year, there was another shooting here in South Carolina, North Augusta. The long and short of it was the officer followed the guy because he was running from the cops in his vehicle 13 miles, pulled him through his driveway. The suspect did. And, you know, the cop was so angry. This is all on the dash cam. He just gets out and just fires into the vehicle and kills him dead. The cops didn't get charged at first.
Of course not.
Didn't get charged at first. So now they finally charge him with a misdemeanor. So he's got, I don't know, a few months of probation, no house arrest, no anything like that.
Yeah, oopsie.
It was on Yahoo. But, yeah, I see that the problem is I don't see where this is going to – I don't see any end to this. The South is just in love with firearms. They're not going to give these guns up.
The only pushback I'm going to give you there, Todd, is don't hang it all on the South. People are in love with their fucking guns all over America. I mean, I'm sure there's an NRA chapter in New York that feels like the man has just got its jackbooted jackboot heel on its freedom-loving neck, because in New York, you can't just walk around with a damn gun strapped on your hip.
What a pleasant thought. Yeah, right. Well, anyway, I don't understand. Something has to happen because there's too much. There's no responsibility. People are getting maimed and killed, and they say, "Well, the gun just went off." Well, but who's going to pay the hospital bills? Who's going to my time away
right,
from
right,
work,
yeah,
my
yeah,
career?
No, exactly. You know, a precious little 2-year-old baby girl. She's got a superficial wound. Well, I guess even in Mississippi, they got chips. So, the Children's Health Insurance Program, because, Hillary Clinton created chips single-handedly, she's told us. So they got
chips. You had to go there, didn't you? Well, why did you have to bring that up? Why?
Because I'm an asshole, that's why.
No, you're not.
So I guess Mama won't be saddled with at least Mama won't be saddled with the medical bill for having, grazed her baby with her Freedom Protector. But she's at least, I mean, as far as I can tell, I can't imagine how not. I would assume she's at least into a new, into a couple of hundred bucks for maybe a new purse.
Okay,
because I mean, don't you? The gun was in the purse, and the gun just went off. So there's bound to be a little 9mm bullet hole in the purse, and maybe some powder burns and such.
Well, no. See, you have to use the type of gun lover logic. The gun lover logic dictates that the right for you to have that weapon anywhere, especially if you have children, you must be able to have it in your purse, no matter what. And if the child gets hurt, even though you were trying to protect the child, the right for you to carry that firearm is more important than what might happen to the child or what might not. Not even to talk about the other people in the emergency room. You're in there with a spleen that's about to rupture, and, oh, I'm sorry, I dropped my handgun, and it went off, and damn it, it went through your spleen, and we were just about to have surgery. Well, you don't need the surgery now. I just did it for you.
Yeah, now you're just going to die. Yeah, it's all just Bugs Bunny saying, oh, dear, I do believe I've forgotten my fudge.
See, I don't see it stopping, though. That's the thing. I mean, what is it going to take?
You don't see it stopping, Todd, because it's not going to stop.
That's some fucked up shit.
And no, I am going to go there. If there's anything that really pisses me off about this presidential election, and God knows there's plenty to be horrified about, plenty to be shocked about, plenty to make fun of over on the Republican side, plenty to be terrified of, but on the Democratic side, Todd, the one thing that pisses me off is this notion of the candidates, both of them, okay? I'm equal opportunity on this, brother.
Mm-hmm.
The candidates walking around telling crowds, I'm going to do something about guns. Shut the up and quit lying to the American people. Hillary Clinton is not going to do dick about guns, and neither is Bernie.
No. They're not touching that. Are you kidding?
No, it's not that they're not touching it. They can't touch it. It's firewalled. Never mind the wall between us and Mexico. There's a wall between us and firearms, or us and sane firearms that is thicker than the distance between here and the sun. And absent a Congress that wants to do something about it, nothing is going to happen. Barack Obama has good lawyers. Will you agree with me on that?
Oh, okay.
I mean, you've got to be pretty much one of the best lawyers in the country to be White House counsel, and on that entire, because there's not just one. There's oodles of them. There's a phalanx of lawyers in the White House. Okay, you can't swing. You can't swing a cat. A dead cat without hitting a lawyer in the White House. That's the way the White House is. Well, guess what? They put the best lawyering minds in the United States onto the issue of what can the president do without Congress about the firearms problem in the United States, and Barack Obama has already done it. There's nothing more to do that a president can do by him or herself.
I think he told people that. As a matter of fact, I remember him saying
yes,
that.
He did, and he wasn't telling another one of those Kenyan Muslim usurper lies.
No, he was serious. Yep. But see, I don't, you know what, I think over the past 10 years, I think there's a larger portion of America that's learning how important and powerful, you know, Congress, it really runs the country. I think people are starting to realize that maybe some people. But I have to ask you a Cruz question. Yeah. It seems to me that he's being exposed. I mean, we already knew this, but he's been exposed for the, and this is a Wednesday question. So he's been exposed for the religious weirdo that he is, right?
Yeah.
How come that's not hurting his, well, it's going to hurt in some places, but it's really not hurting his poll.
Well, it's not hurting him inside the Republican Party. Because the Republican Party is crazier than a sprayed roach, all right? He could. You remember when T. Rump said he could shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue, and it wouldn't hurt his numbers,
right?
Well, there's a degree to which the same thing applies to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Okay, there are some the Republican old guard, such as it is, the establishment of the Republican Party has one thing on its mind, Todd, and that is stopping T. Rump. And so if old Nick himself, redolent in O'Day brimstone, clattering on his cloven hooves, using his pitchfork for a walking stick and twitching his pointy tail this way and that, like a cat in heat, was to walk up and say, I can beat Trump, the Republican Party would do everything in its power to see him be the nominee. And that's the position Cruz finds himself in. I mean, the Republican Party generally hates him. Nobody likes him. He knows nobody likes him. His own children, he goes to kiss them, and these children turn away and go, ew, daddy's kissing me again.
Plus, he put his own kids in a propaganda video, and then he complains when somebody, you know, come on, you put your kids out there first, you know, to make fun of the president. So he needs to sit down and shut up on a lot of different levels of reasons. But he
is a million times more dangerous than Trump.
I thought about what you said, and you know what? I really had to think about it. Maybe it was in the back of my mind, but I'm just so, from living in New York State in the 80s, I just know Trump, and I'm just, ugh, I just know about him. But you're right, because he's a religious, people do Wednesday. People do fucked up shit in the name of religion. See, I don't care what religion you are. If you're an extremist, you should have fucked up. And look, this is me saying this. This is not you saying this. This is one of the problems that the world is having with the same world is having with the people who are in charge in Israel, which they're Zionists. Okay, they're really conservative Zionists.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's like if you take a Hasidic Jew and then add steroids to it, you know, that's what's going on. And the people don't necessarily agree with it. Most of the people don't really agree with it, but they're in the same boat we are. In terms of that's the power elite there, and it's causing trouble. See, anytime you have extremists, I'm preaching to the choir. I'm not preaching. I'm just saying it.
No. I've said it for years. It's not the given faith system. It's the fundamentalism. Okay. You know what? A fundamentalist pacifist is probably dangerous. A fundamentalist Hindu is dangerous. A fundamentalist Jain who won't step on a goddamn bug is dangerous. Fundamentalist Muslims, fundamentalist Jews, fundamentalist Christians, God knows.
Right. Just like hypernationalism. I don't believe in hypernationalism.
Right. And hypernationalism often goes hand in hand with fundamentalist religion. What was it? I saw a story. I didn't really bring it to the table because it was years old. But remember, there was a 19-year-old woman in Saudi Arabia who was gang raped. Okay? Not just raped, gang raped. And the religious court, and that's the only kind of court they got, the religious court sentenced her to receive 200 lashes because she got gang raped because she went out of the house without having all of her brothers and cousins and uncles and daddy and grandpa go with her because, well, you know, fundamentalist Islam says that the problem the mere sight of a female toenail will incite a Muslim man to commit atrocities. Okay, so she gets punished for being gang raped because she asked for it.
Right.
Now, that story had a happy ending. Because
how?
It had a happy ending because the majestic, noble graciousness, his serene, royal, magnanimous highness, the King of Saudi Arabia, commuted her sentence.
I was about to ask you. I figured it was, those Wahhabi people are crazy, man.
Well, sure they are.
I shouldn't say that.
They're no crazier, to get back to your thesis, Todd, they're no crazier than a group of goddamn weirdos in northern Idaho who will let their child die.
No, I absolutely agree. Yep. No injections, no needles, no, we can't.
They're no weirder than a Jehovah's Witness who will let a child die for want of a simple blood transfusion.
See, I have to say this again. I might have said this maybe three times to you, but it's the truth. And the thing is, it's so humorous and outrageous at the same time that you have such a better grasp on the history and how religion works and how it affects society. And a lot of these folks that I'm around, like, you'd be surprised. There's people, I'm like, yo, you're a preacher? Oh, I'm a pastor. I'm like, I can't say what's up, man, in my head. Oh, my God. They heard what I was thinking. My God. Right. So you have these people running around talking about their people as a cloth. And, you know, I wouldn't let them teach my dog how to sit. You know what I'm saying? You know, it seems like they're, I don't know. Religion's a funny thing. That's why I think it should be personal. And I really get offended when I hear these people talk about, well, we have to go back. That's what I wanted to ask you too. So I hear these people talk about, well, you know, we had our Judeo-Christian, beliefs in the beginning, but
I
don't know about
that. There's that phrase that drives me right around the bend, Todd. Judeo-Christian. I hate that phrase, Judeo-Christian.
I know. They love saying that. But see, this is the thing I'm confused about, because like in downtown, right, at Second and Market, there's Christ Church, right? And they say everybody went there. They got the pews with people's names on it, you know, Ben Franklin and George Washington and blah, blah, blah. But I'm thinking they probably went to church because their wives went to church. I don't know. You know, I'm hearing conflicting things. I'm reading conflicting things.
George Washington was a deist. Thomas Jefferson was a deist. John Adams was probably a little bit more religious. Ben Franklin was not religious at all. You know, and so that's why they all talk about Providence. And
right.
In the Declaration it says God, nature, and nature's God. You know, that might as well be some little goddamn nymph clattering through the woods on little cloven heels. And hey, Herc, hey, Herc! You know, for those of us of a certain age who remember terrible cartoons.
I think church was like a meeting place for them, like the tavern.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, look, you know, the Massachusetts Bay Colony was founded by people who were every bit as religiously insane as any Wahhabi Muslim. The Puritans.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of who it was. Maybe it was H.L.
No, you're right.
No, maybe it was H.L. Mencken,
right?
Who said, I forget. It was some Englishman who said, the Puritans live in mortal fear that somewhere, someone might be having fun.
No, that's extreme.
No, that's true. That was the Puritans. You know, every goddamn November, we come around to Thanksgiving time, and we have children in school, little 5-year-olds and little 6-year-olds, bringing home construction paper cutouts of black hats with bands and buckles on them, and making, you know, making 5-fingered mm-hmm. turkey portraits on copy paper.
Oh, please stop.
What about
the Shakers? They couldn't even procreate.
Well, but the Shakers weren't nearly the problem. The Puritans were. The Puritans were some straight up sons of bitches.
Oh, they were. If you're a witch, you won't drown, right?
They didn't really bother to find out. They just hanged your ass. You know, there were no witches burned at Salem. They hanged them, except for the one guy that they pressed to death. You know, they just piled rocks on him until he died.
Well, it's interesting how people have a certain lens that before their judgment starts or whatever, they see things through this lens, and they just can't make the connection. And, I mean, it's so obvious, but you know that these folks that you don't like, you know, over there are kind of judgmental and bad. But you know, maybe you need to look within. Sometimes.
Well, I mean, but see, the problem with being a student of history. Is that the more you study history, the more you will find that history casts as much shade as it does illumination on any given topic. I mean, you study history hard enough, you're going to find out that the people you really thought were special, noble, double plus, super good, were actually very, very much flawed human beings, Todd. I mean, this is Thomas Jefferson's birthday, okay? And we say Thomas Jefferson, and it's almost as if you can hear the heavenly choir going, oh, right? but Thomas Jefferson was despised by his own contemporaries, many of them. In fact, some of them referred to him colloquially simply, and I'm talking about white people, mm-hmm. up north referred to him simply as Massa Tom.
Huh.
Okay. He was vain. He was venal. You know, the idea of secession that Abraham Lincoln busted his hump to keep from being a reality, and that cost 300,000 or 400,000 American lives and a couple of 100,000 traders' lives, too.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that the first proponent of secession was Thomas Jefferson. He was also,
probably didn't want to let go of his slaves.
He talked a big game, but he stayed in perpetual debt, and the only way he could make any money on his plantation was by slave labor. The only thing he ever had that made any money was a nailery, a place that made nails. Okay, but no, he didn't like the Constitution. Are you shitting you? He didn't like the Constitution worth a damn. He wanted to have a whole bunch of little separate sovereign states that could constantly be at each other's throats. And at one point, you know, the first secession crisis was not caused by the South, Todd. The first secession crisis was caused by New England, who were about sick of the Thomas Jeffersons of the world and thought seriously about getting the hell out if they could just get New York to go with them.
Okay. Well, that's where the mills were. The South was providing them cotton, right?
Not so much. Not, you know, not in the early. I mean, we're talking about 1804, okay?
1803. Okay, before the Industrial Revolution. Okay. Okay,
yeah, 1804. But Jefferson, you know, he thought, well, you know, if a state decides to secede, well, you know, they've got a perfect right to do that. And he was also a proponent of that most noxious doctrine, nullification, in which, and we see it every day. Nullification is all the rage now. If, for instance, Mississippi decides that they don't like a federal gun law, well, they can they'll just pass a law saying Mississippi don't recognize that they're gun law, and they think they can do that, and that's called nullification. Well, and we got that from Thomas Jefferson.
Guess what? Maybe you're bringing this up. You have me stuttering because I see. You know how you dip your toe into the pool, whatnot, when it's cold out. You know, in early June, water's full. That's what they've been doing with this nonsense. Look at over the past 10 or 15 years.
Sure.
These states have been picking and choosing, just like this woman down in Kentucky.
Who
the fuck does she think she is? She can't do your goddamn job.
Right.
I don't care if you don't like those people. See, that's the fucking problem I have. This is why we have to have better trained law enforcement. They need to have college degrees. They need to take humanities and understand who you're dealing with. Sorry. You know, I know you want to be a cop, Billy Bob, but your history is lacking. Sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Look, here in West Virginia, when we started passing a whole raft of laws saying that we could override the job-killing Kenyan Muslim usurper EPA's war on coal, that was just another act of nullification.
Do they know what mercury is? Do they have any idea?
The potty bills. I mean, there are federal laws that say trans people are protected in bathrooms. And North Carolina says, well, hell no. We're just going to nullify that by an act of our sovereign legislature.
Bob, let me interject really quick on that because I read the Charlotte Observer almost every day, and that's been in the news. But the thing is, Charlotte is a nice city. It's a real city, right?
I've been there.
Right. So in any city now, like I remember when I used to take the train after work, you go downtown to a nice place for happy hour, you have great specials and whatnot. But, this has been for the past maybe 15 years, at least 12. They just have, it'll say bathrooms, and it'll just be a long row of stalls. And you just go in and handle your business. I mean, this is political. They're making a big deal about nothing.
And
who's going to go in and check?
But it's rooted in hatred. And it's rooted in Christian hatred, Todd.
Well, you know, everybody. See, this is supposed to be everybody's not Christian. That's the thing. They love respect my rights. Well, you know what? It works. It works two ways. And more people like us have to stick up for the people who don't have a voice.
Right.
You know. Otherwise, this thing's not going to work. Anyway, I hope you have a great evening, and I hope your wife is doing well.
Thank you. She's getting better.
Okay.
But I appreciate the kind words. Thank you, Todd. Thank you very kindly. Good to hear from you, my friend.
You too, buddy.
All right. Bye now. Meanwhile, let's run over to the stress line, if I can get the right button. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello. Is it talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
All right. This is a Bob. This is a different Bob from Texas. Is what you usually refer to me as.
Oh, what a joy! What a pleasure!
Yeah. What made me want to call you? I'm more of a listener than a caller. Is the Flint River poisoning has been on my mind quite a bit lately. I happened to see two C-SPAN hearings. This was about 2-3 weeks ago, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I saw, the Republicans blamed the EPA, and the Democrats blamed Rick Snyder. And that's all well and good as far as that goes. But I'm thinking there has to be much more to this story than just Rick Snyder poisoning a city. Do you feel, Bob, that someone has to be in a position to profit from Rick Snyder, I call him Rick Snyder, poisoning a city.
There was a monetary aspect to it, Bob. There's no getting around that, because the whole reason they switched to the Flint River as a water source was because they could save $1.12. And the sad thing is the numbers are really out there. The cost savings were ridiculously, heartbreakingly tiny. But being Republicans, you know, they'll speaking of Jefferson, a Republican will squeeze a nickel till Jefferson screams.
Yeah. You don't think there's something deep? Here's what I'm thinking, and I may be crazy. That's why I called you, just to see what you thought about it. Someone in a position, a donor, a big donor that might be in a position to benefit from driving people out of Flint, Michigan, to buy up property, for example, for pennies on the dollar.
Oh, you mean kind of the way after Katrina, New Orleans got depopulated and sort of been turned into a theme park?
Right. Do you think that's crazy?
No, I don't think that's crazy. I don't know. I don't necessarily know, Bob, that's a prime cause. But Republicans will always move in. You know, that's one of those vacuums that maybe nature doesn't abhor it, but a Republican does. But the front end of it, you know, this is you know, whether it was the city managers. The overtaking of the legislature and the governor's office in Michigan. Remember, you know, there were things that came with that. Michigan, for God's sakes, became a right to work state. And all of this is
right. All
of this is straight out of the ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council playbook, which of course in turn is a reflection of the will of Chuck and Dave Koch.
Right.
And you know, there's always going to be a dollar to be made somewhere along the way. It's going to be. I saw the story yesterday, I think it was, where they said lead levels in water in Flint water are reducing. Flint residents being told to run their water. Yeah, I can remember when the poisoned people of West Virginia were told to. Just run their water, and people got sick because the methylchlorohexane methanol was still in the system. It would not surprise me, Bob, but I haven't been able to identify who that person would be. I know you're a listener and you don't miss much. That's why I've been pushing this theory that there's a big difference between the poisoning of Appalachia and the poisoning of Flint. Flint was politically easy, Bob. Because the Democrats could blame the Republicans and the Republicans could blame the EPA. It gets
right.
a lot more complicated when you come down here and suddenly the people you're blaming are massive coal companies who have tentacles deep into Wall Street and have that whole symbiotic relationship going on with Wall Street and investment banks and hedge funds and all of that, because now you're having to in the case of one of the two candidates, you're having to criticize people who are your donor base.
Right. It just seems weird to me that someone would poison a city like that and that this would just do that. You see what I'm saying? For no other motivation than to just make a few dollars or something. That's about the only thing I can. I know I'm repeating myself, but it just seems like someone would stand to gain. I'm talking about a donor, someone that would say, if you can get the people out of Flint, Michigan, you see, if you can get them to leave because you're feeding poison water to them, and they just leave, then I can buy up that property. That's bound to be good property there.
Oh, sure it is, and it wouldn't surprise me in the least. And you know, when 4 or 5 years from now that begins to happen, we'll be able to say aha, and you know, we will note that this is the 13th day of April 2016, and you, Bob, called it. Because
it just seems like I'm sorry.
Well, no, the only thing I was going to point out is that solving the problem on a long-term basis is gonna cost a lot more money than anybody is realistically talking about in Flint. So that means that what's going to have to happen is all of that is going to have to be fixed. And once it's all fixed, Flint will get gentrified. And there'll be,
right.
White yuppies and so forth will move into old, you know, what had been tenements and have been refurbished by real estate people into dwellings fit for white people to live in. Look at Harlem, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's happening in Brooklyn. Look at what's happening, all over the country in terms of places that used to be where poor people lived and have now been made uninhabitable for poor people so that it could be made safe for wealthy white folks.
Right. Well, I guess that's what I wanted to say is that by just blaming Rick Snyder and just stopping there kind of cuts off the whole idea of what might really be going on. I think we need to look beyond Rick Snyder. Why would he take a step like that just on his own?
I think that's a valid question. I think I don't think he took that step on his own.
You know, I don't either.
I think he was under orders.
I do too. And that's where I feel like that when I see these hearings where the Democrats just focus on Rick Snyder, then that we're pretending like there's not something deeper going on here.
And we have a tendency politically, Bob, to be somewhat myopic, tunnel vision. Rick Snyder is a rich target of opportunity, isn't he?
Sure he is.
But even before this happened, there was nobody out there who thought that Rick Snyder was his own animal. Everybody
right.
understood that Rick Snyder was doing the business of Alec and the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is part of it. For all I know, you know, that remember, it's a public water system we're talking about.
Right.
But if you fix it, and I'm using my own personal experience here, so maybe I'm just nuts. But years and years and years ago, there was a federal project that, of course, my senator, Bob Byrd, was instrumental in getting through that brought water, you know, what we call around here, and maybe y'all do too in Texas, city water.
Mm-hmm.
It brought city water out into the countryside. And it was a real boon, for instance, to the tourism industry and so forth. But it was great for the residents, you know, just the folks who lived here, too.
Right.
Well, no sooner had that city water project, the water extension, and it was a, you know, local public service district, no sooner had that been completed than, lo and behold, here came West Virginia American Water Company saying, that's a mighty nice water system you got there. We'd like to take it off your hands. And almost as if the fix was in, boom, this federally funded water project extension was lickety-split, sold to West Virginia American Water, and the bills have not stopped going up.
Right.
I think the water bills around here have gone up 100-300% since they bought it. All in service of the shareholders. So don't be surprised if the next thing that happens, the question you're asking is the classic Latin term cui bono, you know, who benefits?
Exactly.
Don't be surprised if we don't take just an absolute boatload of federal money and fix the Flint water system and watch American Water come in and say, that's a mighty nice Flint water system you got there. We'd like to take it off your hands.
Right.
And then just backtrack and find out maybe, and this is kind of the nerdy kind of research, that maybe find out what, just, you know, gosh, I wonder if American Water has ever been a member of the American Legislative Exchange Council.
That's the kind of questioning I wish would be going on. Let's don't just look at Rick Snyder.
Right. Yeah, no, look at it all. Look at the totality.
Right. Right. And that's what we need to see is who's behind these scenes, not just Rick Snyder. Anyway, I'm beating a dead horse. I'm not a long talker. Like, I just want to say, too, that I appreciate you and your program very, very much, as you know. And I want to say to all the people who are your regular callers, you've got some great, great callers that are very knowledgeable, and I learn a lot, and I thank them very much, too, for all they put into your program as well.
Well, I thank you very kindly, Bob, and thank you very, very much for your tremendous support of the program. We would be in a terrible spot without it. By the way, Dogman just messaged me and said, Reverend Pinckney of Benton Harbor, Michigan, told us the Kochs were privatizing the area water.
Oh, I see. So that's good to know.
Well, you know, if they can own the infrastructure, they can kind of own us.
That's right. That's right. But that was the frustrating thing to me, is watching C-SPAN, watching the Democrats focus solely on Rick Snyder. You see?
Yeah.
Like he is the one that dreamed up the whole scheme.
Exactly. It's like blaming a demon, well, without acknowledging that there's a devil upstairs or downstairs.
That's right. He's the agent. He's the doer. But he's not the one who thought this up or has a reason for doing this.
No. It's part of a larger plan. And the larger plan is the destruction, and a lot of people have talked about it. Chris Hedges talks about it, who wrote the Shock Doctrine?
Naomi Klein.
Naomi Klein, and Bobby Kennedy has talked about it. The liquidation of the commons, Bob.
Yeah. I would like to see that more explored, though. You see what I mean? Publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Of who's paying you? Where did you get this idea to poison Flint, Michigan? You see, that's what I want Rick Snyder to have to testify.
And if you know,
not just Rick, go ahead.
No, you please.
Not just that Rick Snyder is the boogeyman. Once we get rid of Rick Snyder, everything will be okay now.
No, not by a long shot, and that's a mistake we make. I mean. And in the larger scheme of things, we thought, ah, gosh, we got rid of Nixon. Everything will be good now. Oh,
right.
Mr. Reagan, hi, how are you?
Yeah.
and so we get eight years of Ronnie and 8 years of Bill and 4 years of Pappy. And then, wait a minute, we thought Dan Quayle was the dumbest man that could ever be anywhere near the presidency. Look at that W.
Right.
And now it's like some sort of, and we know how I am with math, but it's like some sort of mathematical degression where we find out just how low the Republican Party can go in terms of brains, in terms of ethics, in terms of morality, and in terms of, frankly, in terms of patriotism. Because
right.
You know, when you've got a Republican Party that is hell-bent on dismantling everything that makes this country, it's hard to think of the Republican Party as having anything patriotic about it.
That's correct.
Well, I have enjoyed hearing from you, Bob, immensely.
I'm not a talker, and you like Angry Indian. I mean, it's unbelievable how you guys can really go. And Carol Baker, I don't mean to just leave anyone out, but you have some great, great callers, and I learn a lot from you guys. And thank you very much, and I'll keep supporting you guys and listening.
All right, thank you, Bob, and you know, don't hide your light under a bushel. You ring in any time. You did just dandy.
All right, thanks a lot.
Bye now. Our buddy Bob from Texas, and see, that's the thing. You call in for the first time, and people sell themselves short. No, that was a great question, and I would never have come. I would never have gone there. But it deserves to be dug into. All right, let's. And by the way, 15 past the hour. Let's just. We're still at about $130 to go. on the evening just to stay to you know to come even, which would be cool, you know, middle of the week and all of that stuff. You know the drill. Let's go have a little chat in Wisconsin. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, hail from Mississippi.
Yeah,
it's Wisconsin.
Yeah, what's happening, Flavia?
No, I was enraptured by the program this evening. I must say it was rather harrowing, actually, emotionally, especially when I was frantically Googling Mariah's story.
Yeah.
And then I came upon the Guardian article, and I was just floored. But it brought to mind a book that I had read, actually in Portuguese. The Vatican and the Reagan administration converges in Central America. And it's by this Argentine journalist, researcher, Ana Maria Ezcurra, E-Z-C-U-R-R-A. And she detailed how, this book was published in 1984, she detailed how the Reagan administration was financing evangelical groups to go to Central America and South America and infiltrate these countries with their, you know, snake handling and so forth. Mariah's story happens every blessed day in Latin America. I mean, they got, you know, like they have televangelists here.
Right. And what, I mean, because what you're talking about, Flavio, is what our dear friend Lottie has long described as the propensity for people in the developing world to practice their Christianity with a rosary in one hand and a dead chicken in the other.
Correct. And the thing is that this happens every day in Brazil, in Argentina, in Central America, practically everywhere in Latin America. They have these charismatic, God, I'm sullying that word. I apologize. That word should not be sullied.
No. Charismatic Christianity is not a sullying of the word charismatic. In fact, I think that's probably the dominant definition of it now, Flavia.
I'm a purist, and, you know, I don't like to use that word except for really, really good things. Not, you know, charisma is not something that, it's something that's innate and it's beautiful. And like you've got charisma, but, you know, like Hillary Clinton, she's about as charismatic as a wart. Okay. what I was driving at was that this happens every day, and the way you told the story of Mariah, and man, can you ever narrate so well? To me, you're like Bill Moyers. You have a southern drawl, but it's captivating. It just like draws you in. It's a drawl that draws. And I feel like I'm listening to Bret Hart or something, or Mark Twain, or...
No, that's way too high praise, but thank you.
No, but seriously. So this lady actually documented the funding of fundamentalism in Latin America by the CIA.
Oh, sure.
In the 1980s.
Look, power structures funding religion.
And the reason was because
it's nothing new, Flavio. I mean, I could take you back to the early days of the 20th century when Mother Jones would tell people here in Appalachia that loving Jesus was fine, but that church they were going to wasn't no Jesus church, it was a company church. And it was absolutely true.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. The Mother Jones, not the magazine.
No,
the Mother Jones.
Mary Harris Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Then you know, with the rise of the tent preachers in the 30s, Billy Graham, you know, it's all funded by the American right wing as a means of keeping as a means of trying to maintain a bulwark against unionism. Maintaining a bulwark against any kind of socialism or leftism. And if you study any kind of unbiased history of, say, a Billy Graham, you will find that his message was unfailingly hyper-patriotic and very much against any kind of collective action or collective bargaining or unionization. It's all there, and it's as nasty as hell, Flavio.
I'm gonna throw you a couple of Tootsie Rolls. Getting back to the story, the reason why they did that was, of course, because of the progressivism of the Catholic Church in Latin America. I mean, in Brazil, for instance, we have Catholic priests who are what's the Scandinavian common law married. In other words, they have a housekeeper that, wink wink, nod nod, everybody knows that's his gal, and nobody bats an eyelash. Okay,
and thus has it ever been.
Yeah, and they don't. You don't see child molestation in Latin America to the degree that you do here. I remember back in the 80s reading a book called, Nationalism and American Catholicism by Christopher Dawkins. But it told the story of how, in order to fit in, the Catholics in this country basically became Protestants. Okay? So in other parts of the world where Catholicism was evolving, I mean, you think of the movie The Mission with Jeremy Irons and Robert De Niro.
Oddly enough, I was thinking exactly of that.
Yeah. And
because I know a little bit about the conquest of Mexico, even the first bishop who was appointed Bishop of Mexico came in and was as brutal as the church can be brutal, but eventually became a scourge to the grandees and the dandies.
And remember,
and the people who ran
Bartolomeu de las Casas,
the estancias, and because he had been given a mission, protector of the Indios.
Bartolomeu de las Casas.
At Las Casas, exactly.
Las Casas.
Who, the black legend.
Whom I
still don't understand why he isn't a saint.
How's that?
Bartolomeu de las Casas. Yeah,
Bartolomeu de las Casas.
Yeah, why isn't he a saint?
Or
Bernardo de Sahagún.
Exactly, Bernardo de Sahagún. Exactly, and no, but to bring it back to what I was trying to say. What was I trying to say? Okay, so that was going on. And so that story of Mariah really moved me tonight, and you narrated it so well. Like Carol, you have a very wonderful gift that you can actually tell a story with all the details and in a crescendo. And but what was I wanted to say something about I hate it when I should have a notepad on me all the time so that I remember what I'm going to say.
Well,
does that happen to you when?
Not well. I have been in my time a prodigious note taker. Yes.
Yeah. No. It's. But the story was really infuriating, and I was thinking that. Oh wow! No, go ahead. You talk. talk for a little bit. Help me out. Help me out. Fish me out.
No. Yeah. Turn the dancing bear loose with the bottle with the bottle of moonshine. I know what you're getting at. And in point of fact, I was having a conversation with Dr. Bill earlier today, and we were talking about Honduras, and that took me back to. Of course, the coup that was engineered by Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's dear friend Henry Kissinger, and because Dr. Bill is just a wellspring of information, I don't think
you got me hooked on him.
I don't think he'll mind me telling this story. We were talking about the Chilean coup, and he said, Bob. I was in school at the time. He said I was teaching. He said he was teaching at the time. He said he got a note from a friend of his, and of course this is long, long ago when getting a note from a friend of yours, especially if the friend was in a foreign country, would involve the friend in the foreign country sitting down with a pen and some paper, usually that onion skin stuff because it's going to be airmail, costs a fortune. And writing the letter, sealing it in the envelope, addressing the envelope, putting it in the mail, and, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks later, it shows up on your doorstep. But God knows, you know, no, a phone call from Santiago, Chile to, you know, Beckley, West Virginia, ain't happening.
Oh, good Lord.
But he said, no, when that was going on, he said a friend of his from school was continuing his studies in Santiago. And that he was staying in a hotel or something, and he'd been in the hotel, and it was apparently where the CIA operatives were staying.
Oh wow!
And he told him in this correspondence about how the CIA agents were bragging about how they were going to flood so much currency into the Chilean market that the Chilean peso? I don't know. I don't know what the currency is.
Yeah, exactly.
But that it would become absolutely worthless.
What did Kissinger say? He wanted to make the Chilean economy scream.
Right, because
and there was even a movie about that. Spacek and what was his name? Jack Lemmon. Sissy Spacek missing.
Yeah, because
what was Kissinger's line?
Government is too important to be left in the hands of the people.
Yes.
Why that evil bastard has not showed up at the end of somebody's rope in the last 40 years.
I don't know. It baffles the mind.
Because he does not leave the country unless he's going to somewhere that he knows that he's not, you know, under indictment for war crimes. But the larger question with Henry Kissinger is how did he retain any currency in government?
How did he get a Nobel Prize for peace?
Yeah, well, but I mean that's a long damn time ago. Okay, I'm talking about how is it that in 2006 his calls are going right through to Hillary Clinton? How is it? In that time period when she's Secretary of State, not 2006, 2008, 2009, how is it that her calls are going right through? How is it that Henry Kissinger has her private email address? Okay?
Yeah.
I mean, why is Henry Kissinger not someone that mothers and little mothers hide put their hands over their children's eyes when he passes by, and make the sign against evil against. Why is that? Because there's something wrong with a country that doesn't treat a monster, a genocidal monster, like the genocidal monster he is. Would please me more than if we could do the give Henry Kissinger the Augusto Pinochet treatment, and ship him off to be tried in
The Hague.
The Hague, my ass. I want him tried in Laos. I want him tried in Cambodia, and then they can go try him in Vietnam while they're at it.
That'd be cool.
Because those are the people who have a gripe with that evil old bastard.
Oh, no. You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. I misspoke. The Hague is too genteel.
Yeah, I mean, they might give him something besides a concrete dirt floor to sleep on. I mean, you know...
Yeah, it'd be like club fed.
You know, and understandably so, the Israelis will move heaven and earth to get a guy who knew a guy whose uncle was a guard at Dachau. I mean, the most tenuous relationship to the Holocaust is enough to get Israel to stop everything, to drag that person to justice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish the Vietnamese had the same ability. If Henry Kissinger was kidnapped in the night and taken off to Hanoi, I would not lose a minute's sleep.
Oh, me neither. No, that man caused so much suffering in Brazil, my country, Argentina, Chile.
American war criminals are not held to the same standard. I mean, it was no easy thing to drag Augusto Pinochet or Pinochet? You tell me, you're the linguist.
No, seriously,
how do you pronounce his last name? Is it Pinochet or Pinochet?
Pinochet.
It was no small accomplishment to drag him off to be tried in Spain.
Baltasar Garzón to do that, and he.
But they did. But they did it, Flavio. Okay.
Yeah, America, they got balls.
Nobody.
They got balls in Spain.
Nobody's ever going to drag Dick Cheney and that decent human being's heart that's beating in his chest off to face a war crimes trial for what he did in Iraq, when I can't think of anything better to do with him than to simply drop him on Main Street, Baghdad, and wish him luck.
Oh yeah, or Main Street, Da Nang, or whatever.
Dick Cheney, Iraq, absolutely, all of that. And by the way, at the risk of engaging in some shameless self-promotion, which I find repugnant in myself, I will tell you that Brother Deacon Asa has said, I agree entirely with Flavio, by the way. I feel like I'm listening to Mark Twain when I'm listening to you speechify.
I mean, you know, that's the thing. They don't teach English in high school anymore. I remember when... Back in the day, we had to diagram sentences. I had a forensics class and a journalism class in high school, where the teacher was just always so thorough. The teachers were always so thorough. They wanted you to cite chapter and verse. Nobody does that anymore. It's infuriating.
Well, in my case, Flavio, the single biggest difference that was made in my life, as a young student, as a high schooler, was the fact that my high school offered Latin, and I took as much of it.
The last ones who took Latin.
I took as much of it as they would let me take. And I remember being just painfully ignorant of how English worked. I just, you know, it was the language I spoke. But it was taking Latin that helped me understand how, you know, the mechanics of how a language works. And I'm, you know, I joke about being a practitioner of the art of word knowing, but, you know, that, to the extent that there's any of that, and I'm still woefully deficient. That's what happened.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I was privileged, and I underline privileged enough to have gone to a Catholic school where they actually taught Middle English and Chaucer and...
Oh, really, with his sure suit to the truth of March, the parrots into the root, and bothered every vein and swish liqueur.
Exactly.
I learned that from the cradle. My mother repeated the prologue to Chaucer's Canterbury Tales to me until I had no choice but to know that little snippet of it.
And it was all oral tradition. It was all oral tradition back then, and the stuff just moves you. I mean, the tale of the wife of Bath had me in stitches.
that's a larger issue that I sort of ponder in my free pondering moments, Flavio. I love writing. I love being able to write. I find it very frustrating. I would love to, you know, someday I'd love to have like a 1-year sabbatical from this. Not that I don't enjoy what I'm doing here. But I get notes from people saying, Bob, when are you going to write a book? And it's just kind of hard to write a book.
You haven't?
I haven't written a book, no. But it's just kind of hard to do when you're doing this. And so I find myself pondering the oral tradition. And I realize that what I'm doing, I mean, my God, if you were to reduce to pages the 12 years of this broadcast, do you have any idea how big that book would be?
Oh my God.
Okay, because I measured it once, and 20 minutes worth of script, double spaced. No. One hour. That's how I measured it out. 1 hour. 1 hour worth of scripted talking. Came to something like 20 or 30 pages. Double spaced. So, you know, you get, you know, 60, you know,
yeah.
60 pages.
It's 60 thousands pages. Upon thousands of words.
Yeah, I mean, the Bhagavad Gita and the Rig Veda got nothing on me.
No, absolutely not. And that's the thing. It's but who can do that nowadays? I mean, it used to be that this country did have an oral tradition. I mean, I think Mark Twain was one of the last ones that really had a grip on that.
Well, but the thing is, he did it in the right order. He started writing stuff, and then he went out on the speaking tours. So there's that. And
no, but I meant he hobnobbed with former slaves, and he learned their speech. And he learned the speech of pretty much anywhere from California to Missouri, and I didn't realize how many regional accents are in this country.
Oh, a lot more then than there are now. We have been to a certain extent standardized. Hey, Flavio, I got folks on hold, but I've enjoyed our conversation immensely, and I've got to roll on.
But, I'll let you go. And again, keep on keeping on, and great work subbing for Malloy.
Oh, thank you.
I really, really thoroughly enjoyed that. And again, God love you. May the flying spaghetti monster touch you with his spindly noodle.
Noodly appendage, absolutely, and may his noodly appendage touch noodle you too. And when that time comes in the far, far distant future, we hope. May you in the grace of his glutinous goodness, receive your stripper factory and your beer volcano, Flavio.
Ramen.
Exactly. Bye now.
Ciao.
our buddy Flavio up in Wisconsin. By the way, I don't know if you're aware of this. I'll go right back to the phones in a sec. I don't know if you're aware of this, but what do they call it? The Nerd Prom. The White House Correspondents Association dinner. It's time for that again. And T. Rump says this time he, by God, will not be there. And he says he's not going because of the dishonest media. When, in fact, anyone who has ever seen the absolute hiding that he took from Barack Obama, in which he suggested that Donald could now go back to, now that they'd solved the birth certificate business, that Donald could go back to more worthwhile pursuits like finding out what happened to Biggie and Tupac. What a line. Donald was not pleased. And so he's not going to go because of the dishonest media. On the other hand, as Carol Baker points out, it could also be because he's suffering from a very, very nasty skin condition right now. It's called thinitis dermatitis. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And by the way, thanks going out to Jenny, our dear friend Jenny in Wisconsin. We had $130 remaining on the fundraising for the evening, and Jenny jumped in and knocked that down in a very large way and sent me a note. Jenny said, "Hey, Bob, I want to finish this night's fundraising in honor of my mom, who passed away at my home last Tuesday. She was always a Republican. Living with me for 4 months, she was excited to be voting for Bernie. Alas, she died on primary day. So we'll round out the night for Kate." Kate, Jenny's mama, who died on primary day in Wisconsin. And, you know, that's another that's another one of those examples. You know, this is ever so much more than just some entertainment. This is a place where we share family. Thank you, Jenny. And your mama will be in all of our thoughts. Indeed, indeed. So that leaves us about $70 to go on fundraising this evening. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you. Quick note coming in from Robert up near Morgantown. CBS News reporting there have been arrests at the T-Rump rally, putsch, whatever, in Pittsburgh. This was going to be an interesting one from jump, if for no other reason that they were forewarned that there would be lots of open carrying going on. The T-Rump supporters are getting serious. They're bringing out the firearms. Whew. Yeah. Well, hey, let's run over to the stress line and talk to Jim. Hey, Jim, what's happening?
Oh, not much, Bob. Great show as usual. When you opened up, you're talking about the guns and the shootings and stuff, and I was thinking, example because it happened to somebody I knew peripherally a long time ago, 20 some odd years ago. I was working in Vegas. I was working at Walmart. Put in my plethora of jobs. But, this guy and this woman, I think, yeah, they were living together, or they were staying at a little cheap, like you said, and you describe it to a T, because I stayed in those places.
I had misdescribed it, Jim. Carol later reminded me that it was on 2020, actually. They had the story, and in point of fact, it was I'm scrolling here looking. A businessman in a hotel died when some construction workers next door were fucking around with their guns. Just like that story from last night, where two brothers who loved each other dearly were just playing Halo, you know, and having a couple of beers, and you know, had their friendly Freedom Protector out, and the next thing you know, Big Brother shoots Baby Brother in the head.
Yeah. And then this happened about a year ago at the place I was working. And you mentioned, it's so weird. It's like we're cosmic, but mentally, or, you know, or the cerebrally connected. I know I didn't say that right. But about the guy cleaning out the gun. And sure enough, he had, I think, two or three kids and his wife. So he's cleaning out the gun. The gun goes off, goes through his leg, hits him in the leg, and hits one of the kids. Fortunately, the kid wasn't badly hurt, but last I heard, the kid pulled through. But, I mean, it's just like, and I remember when they bought the gun, I said, Jesus Christ, you got two, three kids. I mean, little kids, you know, no older than three or four. You know, I kind of understand it for protection, but the whole thing about that, that's such a fallacy. You're not, I mean, unless you're waiting for somebody to come, nine times out of ten, if somebody's going to do harm to you with a gun, they know before you're going to do it. They know before you know, so they're going to get the draw on you.
There are rare occasions, and we've experienced one of them here. You know, we've had someone call and say, you know, I'm coming and I'm gonna kill you. And so, I mean, but no, I understand. I take your point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you don't know somebody's coming for you, you don't know. And then the other one was something I heard on, it has nothing to do with guns, but it was interesting to me the other day. Before you came on, I was listening to Mike Angelo Cingarelli on Sirius, and with the last half hour of the show, he was talking about, this is not completely unrelated to guns, but it has to do, when it was the topic he was basically covering with, remember when the computer age was the big money-making age? If you got computer experience, you got a job, and, you know, for life, and you're going to make a fortune. It's no longer that way from what he, you know, from just what he covered. I mean, now this, it's like the computer age seems to be the new sweatshop where your job security is.
Well, any time. A massive economic shift comes along, capitalism will always step in, Jim, to reduce wages and make sure that unless it's a system where capitalism is rationally managed, if that's even possible, to make sure that the people doing the work make the least amount of money and the people not doing the work get all the money or almost all the money. I mean, I read some statistic the other day that just absolutely blew my mind. And I can't recall the exact number, but it was something like 62 people control more wealth on this whole planet than something on the order of 3,500,000 people. Taken together.
Well, that's not a reason to vote for Bernie Sanders and embrace socialism. I don't know what it is. But
that's a reason for a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you see all these commercials on TV, you know, well, watch about everything's go computer training, and I know those schools probably cost $20,000-$30,000, and all you're going to get is some sort of computer operator job, or I don't even know if they even use computer operators that much anymore. And you're not going to make more than $20,000, $30,000 a year. You're not going to be making, and there are no footpaths to getting up in the high level except for maybe management. And even then, from what I heard the other day, the turnover rate, well, it's not only the turnover rate, but they purposely, they'll keep you around for a while, and then, you know, at the drop of a hat or a whim, they'll let you go. You know, and then even the language.
All of which is deemed to be good for business. Whether you meant to or not, Jim, you provided a segue into something that was kind of big news earlier today. And in so-called environmental circles, there was a lot of back-patting and self-congratulating going on. And look at what we did. Aren't we special? Where's my participation trophy? All of that shit. Because Peabody Energy declared bankruptcy. The world's largest coal company declared bankruptcy. And oh, I tell you what, over there in the green part of the internet, I mean, people were just as proud, just proud as punch. Oh, we've got them on the run. Oh, the coal industry's on its knees. Mercy sakes, look what we've done to big coal. And they ain't done shit. Okay? And the fact of the matter is, watching a coal company go into bankruptcy and seeing the self-congratulation going on just makes me sick. Because all it means is that Peabody will go into Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They will shed all of their pension obligations, which Wall Street hates, the pension obligations, not shedding it. They'll shed all the debt, the liabilities that Wall Street hates, pensions, health care, that kind of thing. They'll file a motion before the bankruptcy judge asking for special permission to pay out millions and millions of dollars in so-called retention bonuses to their executive class, and they will come back like a pit viper that has just shed its skin, meaner than sin, and ready to raise hell. And they're not dying. Well, they're not going away. The trains are still rolling. The blasts are still going off. The planet is still warming. Yeah. And I happen to remember, Jim, the bankruptcy reform of, what was it, 2004? And the entire purpose of the bankruptcy reform was to put the screws to individual families who were, for instance, being crushed under the weight of medical debt. And that's back, and of course, people like Joe Biden were all for it because he represented the credit card industry. And lo and behold, it something that had never before been law became law, and that is that goddamn credit card companies became secured creditors, so you couldn't just discharge their ass in bankruptcy. And the same with medical bills. But by God, there was no reform for the Peabodys of the world. No, they're not going to be eating beans anytime soon.
Well, you can't discharge credit debt. Credit cards.
Right. Used to be you could. I mean, that was the risk.
If you declare bankruptcy, that doesn't discard credit debt.
No, you can't just say, well, you know, here's all my credit cards, and they're unsecured creditors, so tell them to pound sand. No, they get a piece of your ass in the bankruptcy.
Wow. What was that, 2004?
Yeah, I think so. if I recall correctly.
It's amazing. I mean, if people can't see, I understand why, you know, a lot of them are too busy thinking that they keep the nuts, the grindstone, everything will work out. But if they can't see this, I mean, it's so, the game is so fixed. It's unbelievable. It's like, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, I see a conspiracy here, Bob. I know it's not in my DNA.
Well, that's only because there is one. You know, the word conspiracy's gotten kind of a bad name because people out there giving it a bad name. But you know, when the Congress reaches an agreement with corporate America that we're going to put the screws to the little people and give a pass to the and give a pass to the corporate persons, that is a conspiracy. The only problem is, along the way, they made it perfectly legal.
Yeah.
See how it works? Hey, Jim, I got to roll, but it's awful good to talk to you.
Talk to you later, bub.
All right. Later. Thank you. Bye. That's our buddy Jim in Louisiana, Stan. By the way, a note from Brother Deacon Asa. Going back to Bob in Texas's call, I think Bob's notion about the Flint water crisis has merit. That is, this is what I posted on March 4th this year in response to a related article. Quote, I'm a hell of a lot more cynical than all you guys. I think the Flint water crisis was a pilot project for the whole country. What was the first action taken by the Snyder regime in response to the water crisis? That is, after the fact that they refused to recognize it as a problem for 2 years. The very first thing they did was call in Nestle to come in and supply bottled water to the masses. See? Free market solution to your government's incompetence. We told you suckers the government was bad and private enterprise was the solution to your problems. Now, let's repeat the same thing in Texas and California. We can't make this free market water business viable with pissant populations like Flint. We need poisoned water for the masses. Ta-da! And yeah, along the way, Cindy in the Great Northwest said, I'm surprised you don't know the background of the recall efforts for the duration of his crooked union-busting Koch brothers' career. I do know it. It's been talked about in Buzz Flash Truth Out for years. I do know. Yes, years, Bob. Snyder shut down the water to ruin it so that it could be sold to and saved by the Koch brothers so they can have a stream of income in their future. Sell out the community-owned infrastructure and go back to the Middle Ages where the local lords collected fees for travel, water, well, anything a man must do to live. Of course, no public education, hard-ass libertarianism. I love the horn because it's all about the Appalachian folk who I admire and love. There's a mountain of shit hitting out here, too. A lot of history on Snyder on the net. Meanwhile, state nullification is helping Washington State keep big coal out. We're waging a hell of a fight out here. Well, you're trying. You're trying. But the trains are still rolling and the coal's still getting on boats out there. But, yeah, nullification can be a double-edged sword. Problem is, you kind of have to take you have to take the good with the bad. All right, so thank you all very kindly for your kind attentions this evening. As they say in those churchy places, here endeth the lesson. Thank you very kindly to all of you for sharing your precious finite time in this conversation. Thank you for thank you so very much. However you participate. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.